You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, Heat Nation, and welcome to your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, the only podcast that breaks down every game, news item, rumor, and more. Thank you for subscribing on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or on Himalaya. My name is David Ramil. The Miami Heat were back on the floor on Monday after their disappointing loss to the Sixers over the weekend, this time facing the Charlotte Hornets. The Hornets are rebuilding yet again after they lost Kemba Walker to free agency. He's now with the Boston Celtics, obviously, and this was the first of four meetings between the Southeast Division rivals. Charlotte jumped out to an early 7-0 lead and were playing at an unusually fast pace, not the kind of start you'd expect from Miami as they were looking to bounce back after their loss to Philadelphia, but Miami soon figured out the speed of the game and went back to their style of basketball. They built a slim lead after the first quarter, leading by 5 points, but would go on to build a 23-point lead, slowly and methodically beating down the overmatched Hornets team. Jimmy Butler and Bam Adebayo led all scorers with 21 points each, and Kendrick Nunn chipped in 19 points after really struggling against the 76ers. Kelly Olynyk had one of his best games of the season against Charlotte, scoring 15 points on 5 of 8 shooting, including 4 of 5 from 3-point range. A lot of those shots were really great momentum builders for the Heat, and Olynyk's performance really helped to turn the tide in Miami's favor. It seemed like he had his shot really dialed up, and again, a lot of those shots were pretty smooth in transition or when he was wide open. He looked confident. The problem with Kelly has always been one of consistency. He's never been completely confident letting that shot fly. I've talked to a number of his teammates who've always told him, just let it fly, shoot it whenever you're open and things of that sort. And Kelly has been a little reluctant to do so. And unfortunately, he's always been a little inconsistent as well, going back to his days with the Boston Celtics. But against the Charlotte Hornets on Monday, he looked really good. And again, very, very smooth, good momentum builders for Miami after every one of Kelly's shots. Tyler Herro looked pretty good as well. He added 18 points and 6 of 13 shooting. And he looked confident, comfortable in his role. One of the things I should point out is that after the Sixers loss, I was concerned with how Kendrick Nunn and Duncan Robinson and even Herro to some extent would bounce back from a really big loss like that to Philadelphia. Nunn, in particular, looked like he was really struggling with his shot against the Sixers. He looked like he was a little overmatched, a little too overexcited there, a little atypical for him. And I was curious to see how he'd bounce back against a bad team like Charlotte. And he bounced back really well. Again, a lot of those shots were pretty confident. He was engaged very early on. He looked like he had his offense really dialed up and played very, very well. And a good game for him. Duncan, not so well. He finished with just 6 points on 2 of 6 shooting, both of those makes from beyond the arc. And he didn't really contribute much else, just 2 assists, 3 steals. That's a big game for him. And he did finish with a +9 overall rating. So not a bad game from Duncan Robinson, just not the kind of offensive output that we would have liked for a player like him who's capable of shooting so well, but still willing to take the shot. And I think that's the positive step. All these guys, Nunn, Robinson, Herro, you're curious to see how they bounce back after a bad loss, especially because they're young. They struggle at times, and you need to see a little bit more consistency from them. So hopefully they can take that loss, internalize it, and make it into a good teaching tool. So good for them that they bounce back there. And Goran Dragic, however, has looked like he's a little bit off of late. He had some good moments against the Sixers, one of the few players to do so. But against the Hornets, he struggled. He's not been as dynamic as he was earlier in the season, and he finished with just 6 points on 25% shooting. So I'm not sure if it's the wear and tear of the regular season. You know, he was obviously much more energized to start the year, and you wonder whether or not his age and injuries kind of take their toll over the course of the year, and you wonder whether or not he's going to be able to continue to perform at a high level, at the high level he was playing at earlier in the season. You know, obviously we were talking about him as a potential six-man candidate. That seems less likely now because his numbers have continued to dwindle. He's not shooting as well as he was earlier in the season. So hopefully he can bounce back at some point. But, he did not look good against the Hornets. Some more numbers here. Miami as a team shot really well, 52% on all field goal attempts and 42% from long range. Pretty good shooting, obviously. Perhaps more impressively, however, they were 24 of 28 from the free throw line, almost 86%. So clearly those free throw numbers that a lot of you had worried about at the start of the season They've rebounded pretty well, and so I think that's a positive. Obviously, you know, Jimmy Butler clearly shooting very well from the line. He was 9 of 9 from the line on against Charlotte on Monday. 5 of 5 shooting from the free throw stripe for Bam Adebayo. 3 of 4 for Chris Silva. 4 of 4 for Hero. So some really good shooting overall. In fact, Dragic, unexpectedly, went 2 of 4 from the line. So his shooting struggles not only extend from the field, but also to the free throw line as well. As far as the overall game is concerned, you know, there's not much to glean from there. I think Charlotte, you know, they're not particularly good. They're 6-12 now following the loss to Miami. Miami obviously improves to 12-4, and they're 7-0 at home following the win against Charlotte. The Hornets, as an opponent, aren't particularly great. They're struggling as far as they're, you know, trying to find an identity now that Kemba Walker is in Boston. They've got Terry Rozier there, who is, you know, their quote-unquote star, I guess, or their best player, perhaps. You know, P.J. Washington has had some moments for them. You know, he's a rookie out of Kentucky. He played alongside Hero there during Hero's one season with the Wildcats. He's had some moments. But overall, this is not a very good team, nor is it a very deep team. There's not a lot of high-end talent there. And so you wonder whether or not this is a true litmus test. But, you know, one of the recurring themes is that Miami has to beat up on these bad teams, and they certainly did so. You know, a 23-point lead against a bad team is still pretty good. And while eventually Charlotte chipped away at that, Miami responded well. They were able to tighten their defense in those moments when it looked like Charlotte was going to try and mount a comeback, and they hit some big shots from Hero, Olynyk, and others. And that was just enough to kind of continue to push Miami away from them and to get them a nice necessary win. Adebayo in particular looked really good, especially in the fourth quarter. He has an incredible tireless engine, it seems, where he just continues to get to, you know, play at a high level throughout the game. He played 34 minutes, more than anybody else on Miami's roster, and he did finish 8 of 14 overall from the field, as well as, like I said, 5 of 5 from the free throw line. Finished with 13 rebounds, 5 assists, and a block. So a really good game from him, and just a solid performance from Miami. So maybe, you know, they weren't hanging their heads after their loss to Philadelphia, nor were they looking ahead to a big matchup against the Houston Rockets on Wednesday. So what can you say? It's a good win, and I didn't see anything that really stood out as far as any kind of performances are concerned. You know, Miami was still a little depleted as far as their overall roster is concerned. They were without James Johnson, who was sent home due to illness. And the team was also without Udonis Haslem, as well as Deion Waiters, of course, who's still suspended. Derek Jones Jr., KZ Okpala, as well as Justice Winslow. Although we did get some good news regarding Justice, who's been cleared to practice on Tuesday. And according to the team, if he responds well, he'll be listed as active on Wednesday night when the team travels to Houston. And he should be available to play against the Rockets. So that's an interesting wrinkle there, something that we hadn't expected, and it looks like he's nearing his return to play, and hopefully he can come back and play at a high level the way he was before his injury. So good news, a silver lining to what's been a somewhat bleak weekend. I mean, they did win against Chicago on Friday. They also lost badly to Philadelphia, and then they struggle at moments against a bad Hornets team. But now they're looking to kind of tighten up as they enter into a nice stretch of their schedule where they play some bad teams at home, and they can build up that record a little bit more. But we'll move on from that. Coming up next, Miami's looking to add some current Spurs to the roster. That's the rumor. You're listening to Locked On Heat. I'll get into the player and stat of the game in the next segment, but some more thoughts on the game as well as some of the questions you sent in using the hashtag AskLOHeat. Stephen Wang asks, after seeing the volume of touches that Bam gets, I feel that he has to take his offensive game to the next level, especially his mid-range game. After the 76ers' loss, another go-to offensive player is necessary. If not Bam, then who? Well, I'm not so sure. I still have concerns about Miami's willingness to engage in any kind of trade this season. As I mentioned during the mailbag episode of Monday, which you all should totally download and check out if you have not already done so, you know, a suggestion from one of my listeners was that maybe we could look into acquiring Blake Griffin or Zach LaVine or others. Those are possibilities. I just don't know that Miami's actually going to get that kind of consistent high-end player who's going to be making a lot of money and could potentially you know, limit Miami's chances at adding a key free agent down the road. I know that's their plan. It's not a secret. And, you know, adding a quality high-end go-to offensive player, as Steven suggests, would take a lot to give up from Miami's current roster, and it would add a lot of salary onto the roster, more than likely. There aren't many key offensive players who aren't going to be making money beyond the season. You don't want to, I don't know that there are any key free agents entering the free agency next season that Miami is looking to acquire. I mean, and although these players are always movable at some point down the road, if you just want to add them to the roster for 2 years and then still retain salary cap flexibility, that's an option, but it's, you're hamstrung a little bit and you're not necessarily going to be able to move those players if you can't find any takers there. So that's not the best strategy. But as far as whether or not Miami needs an offensive player, I think they feel like they have enough with Nunn and with Duncan Robinson capable of stretching the floor. They haven't had justice other than for the few games that he's played. Not nearly enough of a sample size to determine whether or not he might be that offensive player. If he can get to the rim pretty easily, if he can add another level to his scoring, and if he's shooting consistently, then he could be that offensive player. He could be the guy who has the ball in his hands, who makes plays for others, who can also get his shot off whenever he wants. So he has his size, he has his speed. We haven't seen enough as far as the polish is concerned, but he's a capable scorer. And I think you're looking at a team that's just going to be scoring by committee. It could be on any given night. Tonight it was Kelly Olynyk who stepped up. It could be Kendrick Nunn the next night. It could be Duncan Robinson the night after that. And hopefully it could be Justice as well if he comes back and at full strength. So I don't think that they're adding a player that's going to cost a lot of money who could be a nice addition this season. That's not how they operate. But Barry Jackson of the Miami Herald suggests otherwise, because a couple of days ago he wrote that Miami might be interested in acquiring Derek DeRozan or LaMarcus Aldridge. Now, he's not necessarily reporting that Miami is interested. He hasn't seen any kind of motion from them, nor is he thinking that the Spurs are willing to move DeRozan or Aldridge. I talked to Jeff Gomez of Locked On Spurs. He clarified for me that they're not looking to trade either of those players just yet, even though they're in the midst of a 7-game losing streak and they're having their best or worst record that they've had in over, you know, 2 decades. Either way, they've got DeRozan, they've got Aldridge, and they're not looking to move those guys. But they cost a lot of money. It does limit, you know, flexibility moving forward, although DeRozan, I think, is a free agent, and so is Aldridge. So those books, those contracts come off the books. But there's also limitations there. I mean, you're going to have to give DeRozan the ball a lot, and he's going to slow the offense down. He's going to over-dribble. He's going to get into the paint. He's going to take a mid-range shot, etc. That kind of slows up the offense, you know, especially the way that Miami's been playing with so much off-ball movement, so much passing and cutting. I don't know that DeRozan is the right fit there. And that goes for Aldridge as well. He's a good mid-range shooter. He can stretch the floor a little bit, but he needs the ball in his hands. He's a kind of guy who gets the ball, faces up to the basket, puts the ball down, dribbles, and then takes that turnaround jumper by using his length to extend over an opponent. It's fine offense, but it can slow things down considerably, and neither of them really fit the current style that has worked so well for Miami. And I don't know that either of them are quote-unquote go-to scorers either. So as far as Barry's rumor, I'm not sure that it pans out that way, and I don't see them actually engaging the Spurs in any kind of trade talk. It would probably cost a considerable amount in order to pry either of those players from the Spurs roster, even though they are losing, as I said. So I don't see that as a realistic trade scenario. They're good names. They're big names. They're, you know, they've shared many all-star appearances between the two of them, but they're probably a little bit past their prime. They're still a little bit, you know, they're limited as far as their overall offensive output is concerned, and not the best fit for Miami. Levine's a better option, as I mentioned during the mailbag episode, but again, I'm not so sure that Chicago is looking to move him, although it's clear that there's some tension there between Levine and head coach Jim Boylan. My feeling is that right now, they're 12-4. It's 16 games in the season, not even 25% of the way through. They've achieved quite a bit more than I think most people expected, even people in the front office. And they've been very, very positive. They've done some very good things. They've had some big wins. They've had some good wins. And they've racked up enough of them, so I think that they're going to be patient. They've already exceeded expectations for the season, I think. And they haven't done so with a full roster. They haven't had either Justice available or Derek Jones Jr. They haven't had Deion or James. And I think if they're going to ever utilize those guys who can contribute offensively, the reality is that they'd probably rather be patient, wait to see once everybody gets healthy, And if they can't add somebody at that point, maybe they will. But I think they're looking to keep the core as it currently constructed, to keep this roster intact and see how far this can go. I think they've already, like I said, they've already done so much offensively and defensively that I think making a change mid-season might be a bit of a step back there, unless you're acquiring an established star, and it's not like those are readily available there. So, I just don't see a big move like this on the horizon. It could play out differently. You never know with Pat Riley. He's made moves like this in the past. He might be looking to do so again. He did tell, or he has said before, that he'd be willing to make the right move if it's available, but it just doesn't seem like it is at this point. Player and a Stat of the Game are next. You're listening to Locked On Heat. Audible has the world's largest selection of audiobooks and audio entertainment. Start listening with a 30-day Audible trial. Choose one audiobook and two Audible originals absolutely free. Visit audible.com/lockedonNBA. If you're listening on the go and you can't visit Audible right now, you can find this and all other offers from Locked On sponsors at lockedonpodcasts.com/offers. Remember to listen to and subscribe to new episodes of Locked On Heat on Himalaya, as well as on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Podcasts. If you're on iTunes, please leave a rating and review, especially if it's a good one. The stat of the game, well, it's 14. That's the number of turnovers Miami had in the second half. They finished with 19 overall, so they had 5 turnovers in the first half, prompting a lot of people on Twitter to say, well, maybe this is finally Miami being able to tighten the screws a little bit, figuring out how to prevent from them turning the ball over frequently. Unfortunately, that wasn't the case. They did get sloppy, as they have in the past. This is a problem with the team, I'll be honest with you. Against a inconsistently good team like Charlotte, I wouldn't want to rack up those kinds of turnovers and say that this is a positive sign for Miami. It clearly isn't. They only had 5 turnovers. They should have kept it around that number. You realize that Charlotte was going to do everything they can to mount a comeback, but to force 14 turnovers is really, well, unexpected. Miami has to do a better job. They do get a little sloppy at times, everybody. And I know it's a byproduct of the way that they play offensively, where they're swinging the ball, moving it around, making the extra pass, etc. It's going to be a little risky at times, and sometimes that risk doesn't pay off and leads to a turnover. But still, 19 turnovers in the game, it's a continuing problem. We saw it against the Sixers, against good teams. It's going to exploit the Heat a little bit. It's going to rear some weaknesses. It's going to be an obvious weakness that can be exploited, and you don't want to do that. It's worked against bad teams or mediocre teams, and that's not going to be good enough if you want to make a deep playoff run. So you have to figure out a way of changing that, and I don't know what the answer is, because honestly, it doesn't seem like it should be that. But I mean, you get good passing all around. You get passing from Adebayo, Jimmy, etc., and sometimes they just make the wrong pass. Sometimes they're looking to hit ahead to somebody, and it leads to a turnover. In Adebayo's case, sometimes he's looking to initiate offense, and he finds a cutter or somebody on the perimeter. He swings the ball a little wildly at times. And if you get guys like Justice, who's going to have the ball in his hands so much, who's looking to make plays for others, those numbers are probably just going to pick up even more so. And so that's an alarming trend that Miami needs to find a way to correct. Player of the games, Bam Adebayo, as I mentioned before, incredible stat line from him, and just really, really impactful, solid defense as always, and his offense just continues to take another level. I continue to be impressed with his overall game, taking a next step. And, to Steven's question before, I'm not sure if the expectation from him internally from the Heat front office is that he'll be that superstar or a go-to scorer. He can just be a good, versatile player, maybe the second coming of a Paul Millsap type. Now, what needs to happen is that he does need to stretch the floor more consistently. And we forget that he's still only in his third season. He's still just 22 years old. And even against the Hornets, he did let that jumper fly a little bit. I know it's something that he's been working on. He does feel like he's off the leash a little bit as far as Spoelstra is concerned, letting Adebayo take that jumper a little bit more freely. And if that's the case, maybe he'll start to knock it down somewhat, because I think the form is there. I think he's been working on it enough. He's done the work over the offseason, so he should be able to knock that down pretty regularly, and hopefully he'll continue to do so, because we've seen flashes from him as far as that mid-range jumper are concerned, and hopefully he'll be much more comfortable as the season progresses. So if that's the next step for him, hopefully he's already begun to take it. The scapegoat of the game, unfortunately, one had to be chosen, And this time it's Goran Dragic, as I mentioned before, continuing to struggle from the floor. He had some moments against the Sixers, but he did not against the Hornets. 2 of 8 overall, 0 of 3 from 3-point range, just 2 of 4 from the free throw line. Did finish with 9 assists, so playmaking ability was there, and he was making the right pass, although he did also have 5 turnovers. So he led Miami with 5 turnovers. Kelly Olynyk had 4 of those. But, you know, Goran, I hope that he's able to bounce back because, you know, when he's dialed up, when he's as good as he can be, he adds another dimension to this Heat team, and he does make them a legitimate threat. He's not the overpowering scorer. He never really was, even when he was younger and healthier, even when he was playing at his best. He never was really an overpowering scorer, more of a complimentary guy. But you already have that dominant scorer in Jimmy, and so you hope to have more complimentary scorers like Goran, like Olynyk, like Adebayo, Nunn, and others who can kind of step up there. You know, maybe that's not the recipe that you'd want for playoff success. But at the same time, for now, as far as racking up wins, the kind of wins that I think all of you are looking forward to, you need more consistent output from that secondary crew of scoring options. And we just don't get it on a night-to-night basis. Everybody has an off night. And unfortunately for Goran, his was on Monday night. Hopefully he can bounce back on Wednesday against the Houston Rockets. But stay tuned because I'll be recording a crossover podcast with Locked On Rockets as we preview that rematch on Wednesday between Miami and Houston, so make sure you listen to that. But that's it for today. You can connect with me on Twitter using the hashtag AskLOHeat or email me, as always, at LockedOnHeat@gmail.com. I'm David Ramil signing off and thanking you for your support.
Wrap it up, B.